Welcome to Wanna Be Clutter Free, the podcast for ambitious moms who are ready to ditch the mess and stress for good. Let's simplify, organize, and create a life you actually love waking up to. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey there, my friend. Welcome back to the show. My name is Deanna Yates, and you are listening to episode 307 of the Wanna Be Clutter Free podcast. All right, today's conversation is a good one. I'm sitting down with Lighty Klotz. He is a behavioral scientist and engineering professor at the University of Virginia. So you might know him from his first book, which is called Subtract. And I've mentioned it multiple times on the show because I absolutely loved it. I think it is fantastic for the work I do and for the conversations we have about how we can first look at letting go instead of adding to in order to solve our problems. But this conversation is going to be a little different than normal. It's a little headier. We talk about, you know, some big concepts, but I think you're going to really love it. We bring it down into what we're doing in the world or how our behaviors and our environments affect us. And so I think you're going to love it. He's been published in tons of journals too. So he's been in Nature and Science. He's been on shows like The Hidden Brain, Freakonomics, and The Atlantic's How to Build a Happy Life. And his new book that just came out is called In a Good Place. And it's all about how the physical spaces where we live, work, and play shape how we think, feel, and connect with the people around us. And honestly, it's a conversation that feels like we're just two friends having a cup of coffee. We dive into architecture and design and how we set up our spaces and how we think about our spaces. And so it's really interesting to look at this from a research perspective. We talk about the three core psychological needs our spaces need to feed or starve, why clutter literally gets between us and the people we love, what happens when we let our kids have a say in how the house is used, and this beautiful concept of nostalgia versus the renovation trap that I think is going on a lot when we get into that comparison or constant scroll or Pinterest perfect ideas. I also want to let you know that Lighty does share openly about his daughter, Josie. She passed away unexpectedly at 4 years old, and her story is woven throughout the book. And we talk about her in this conversation, and it's both heartbreaking and deeply beautiful. So I just wanted to give you a heads up if that is something you want to be aware of, but we don't talk about it really until the end of the conversation. So there's lots of really great stuff ahead of that. If that's just too much for you to get into today, I just wanted to give you warning, okay? All right, and I hope you love this conversation. If you do, please make sure you are subscribed to the show. So just go ahead and hit that follow button so you don't miss any episodes. And then come hang out with me on Instagram. I am at wannabeclutterfree, and I'd love to have a conversation with you. All right, you can get the show notes for today and links at wannabeclutterfree.com/307. All right, let's dive right in. Well, hi, Lighty. Welcome to Wanna Be Clutter Free. How are you doing today?
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited about this conversation. I read your first book, Subtract, and was in love with it. It was so great. I have mentioned it on this podcast multiple times. And so I'm very excited to have you here to talk about your newest book. But before we jump into that, can you just let listeners know who you are and what you do?
Okay. My official job is I'm a professor at the University of Virginia. I'm in the Department of Engineering and Society and a joint appointment in architecture. I do a lot of research on how people think about design and how we interact with our surroundings. So that's where the books have come from. And, but that's my, I think, you know, the book writing is a huge part of what I do, and I'm fortunate to be able to do with this job. And then also a father. I'm assistant soccer coach for under 12-year-olds. And so, I do all the things that, you know, you might expect somebody of that age and in that life phase does.
That's the life phase we're in for sure. Yeah. Assistant soccer coach. I've tried things like, Girl Scout troop leader and things like that. And it's a lot of work. So good for you. That's awesome that you're, I'm sure.
It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of
super rewarding.
It's a huge pleasure to be able to be involved in, be involved in those kids' lives. And just try to help them as much as possible. I think it's probably in the same in all the areas, but I know in soccer, I mean, I played soccer all growing up, and I mean, it's so much farther ahead than where it was. I mean, they're doing things that I was doing in college.
Wow. Well, this is going to come out a little bit later than we're recording it. But right now the Olympics is kind of wrapping up the Olympics. And we always kind of wonder, like, how does the sport progress so much, right? From when I was my daughter's age watching the Olympics and watching the ice skaters, and like just now they're throwing quads and all this crazy stuff. And it makes sense. They're starting younger, they're doing harder things younger. So that's so interesting.
Yeah. And obviously, you just try to avoid the negatives, but there's just so much positives in the things that they're able to do. And I think, like, even the psychological parts of it, you know, having the kids understand how do you like be really good at this without having it consume your identity, and then like the physical training of, you know, them understanding their body better to be able to perform. So yeah, and then you've got people spinning quads like multiple times in a routine, and I was the same thing. I remember watching figure skating back then, and it was like, can this person potentially do a quad? And it never happened.
Crazy. Yeah. So anyway, that's not even what we're going to talk about, but I think it is a little bit what we're talking about, kind of like that intersection of behavior with our environments, and whether our environments are outside of our home, but probably more on this episode, we will talk more about inside our homes. So I think there is a lot of overlap there between the two. And actually, before we started talking, I was saying how we used to live in downtown Chicago. And what I actually didn't put in any of my notes or questions to you was the fact that I actually worked for an architect. I worked for a real estate developer in downtown Chicago. And so I think that's probably why I'm also so fascinated about your research and what you do in your books, because it is so fascinating how our environments really do affect us, and we in fact affect our environments as well. And so I find it really fascinating. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we're going to talk about, it's our original relationship as a species, right? As like with our surroundings. And I think, so it makes sense that it would be fascinating, right? The same reason, I don't know if you've watched any of those YouTube videos that show people like building huts in the jungle, or even just Minecraft, the video game, which is super addictive, and Legos.
Minecraft.
And there's all of these.
Oh, interesting that might be one of the reasons why I love those things so much. I didn't even make that connection before. So very interesting. So let's talk though about like what this new book is about, because Subtract was really about helping us think about the power of less, taking things away instead of adding to, when I think our default is it's so much easier to add than to be really methodical and subtract. But now in your new book, it's called In a Good Place. We are talking about this physical, our physical spaces and how they shape us. And it's about where. So can you tell us what drew you to spend over a decade exploring the relationship between our spaces and our well-being? What was that spark?
Yeah, and I'm glad you put it as kind of like, I think it was much more of a drew me than a single spark, right? It's kind of like you described, you had an interest in your surroundings, and I've always had an interest in my surroundings. And then as I've gone through my life and career, I mean, my job as an engineering professor, obviously we're looking at that from the very technical side. But then as I've been able to do research and explore the things that I think are going to make a difference, I've gotten much more interested in the psychology and what's going on in people's heads. And of course, both of those things matter, but I think this book is really me trying to put them together, you know, saying, okay, this is a relationship between us and our surroundings, and it's partly influenced by what's happening in our heads, and it's partly influenced by, you know, our surroundings and like what's happening at that intersection and what matters at that intersection. And I think that's probably kind of come to over the 10 years and almost like a narrowing down to what's really important there. And I mean, I talk about this in the book a little bit, but it's, you know, it was always telling to me that these things were kept in different spots, right? Whether it's the university campus where you've got architecture over here, engineering over here, and then like psychology in some other building, right? And the same in bookstores, right? You've got the books on interior design in one place, and then you've got the books on psychology in another place. And I understand that like we need to put things in different places, otherwise you're never gonna find anything. But sometimes that can, you know, make it so that there's, we're not looking at the overlap as much as we could. And in this case, I think it's especially important to look at the overlap because, you know, kind of like I said, this is our original relationship. So I think of it, maybe think of it in terms of like hunter-gatherers, right? Wandering on the savannah. It's like the ones that were able to think about their surroundings and do something to their surroundings were more likely to survive and pass on their genes. And so like we still have this, you know, not just instinct to do it, but it feels good psychologically to do things to our surroundings, to engage with our surroundings. And so that's kind of how I got interested in this.
Yeah, no, I think that's fascinating. And I think it's so interesting. It mirrors, I think, a lot of our journeys in this realm, in like the minimalism, decluttering organization space. I've talked to so many people that are like, yeah, I started with my physical space. Like I started with my stuff. And then the more I've gotten that under control, the more it shifts to relationships or just mindsets and the mind work and all that psychological clutter that we carry around with us. And so I think that's very interesting how it kind of mirrored what you were saying, right? You started kind of more in the physical and then you got more interested in the psychological aspects of how our space affects us. And so, I think that's a pretty standard progression as I'm seeing it over and over and over. It feels very repetitive in the sense that a lot of us go through that same journey.
Yeah, that's incredibly, wise to point out, I think. I mean, one of the things that was fun for me writing the book was like all of these things that like come from the spatial world that have been adopted to the mental world, like boundaries, for example, right? It's like they teach little kids. And I remember when like my daughter Josephine, one of my favorite stories with her, I was walking to do laundry I was going to do laundry in the back room, but that was where she was playing. And so I like walked through and I like somehow entered her like 10-foot circle and she's like, space. And I'm like, what? And she's just, but it was like her, like she had been taught that at school, that if people were like where you wanted to be, then you could say space. And that's a way of like creating a physical boundary. But one reason they're teaching that is that also helps with social boundaries, right? It's like, no, this is me and that's you. And like, you're not infringing on, you know, on certain elements of me. And so, I mean, there are all kinds of examples like that where the physical, this concept that, you know, boundaries is now often pretty exclusively talked about in terms of relationships, and yet it's a physical thing where it's come from. I think, and the minimalism, I think, is also interesting because it just ties back into, you know, so much of that seems to be about like, do I feel a sense of control or agent, not necessarily control in a bad way, but just like agency. Do I have a say in what's going on here, or is my life just going to get consumed by all this stuff? Yeah. And so, and then of course, like you said, that extends to, well, I have control over my space. Now I have control over like the information that's coming in and I can do something about that.
Love it. Oh my God. I love that. And I love that they're teaching these concepts to children younger and younger and teaching them how to build agency for themselves. We need that in this world. So we need us all to be able to, be able to take up space. I've been saying that even as a middle-aged woman of like, no, I deserve space. So I absolutely love that they're teaching this to younger children. It's fantastic.
And the kids love it, right? Because they're just so used to, I mean, that's their whole thing, right? You think that we give them all this freedom and stuff, but really they're just doing what their parents and teachers want them to do, right? It's like, you're going to the school, you're going to be in this room, you're going to do this thing. And for them to be able to be like, no, I'm going to do this other thing, or I have some control over who can come into my space. It's like so empowering for them.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, very true. Okay, let's talk about... Let's go back to our homes. And you said that these are kind of those first relationships we have. But what are, like, if our spaces feel like they're working against us, Can you walk us through the three core needs that you say our spaces need to either feed or starve us? Like if we're feeling, because a lot of people are listening to this show and they're like, this is fantastic. I love this for you. But I feel overwhelmed. So what do I need to be looking at in my home?
Yeah, I think, that's perfect. Next question. So the three core needs that we have, these are the core psychological needs that we have. It's not my research. This is like self-determination theory. It's like we need agency, you know, the ability to have a say in the world around us. We need to be able to grow and have growth. And we need to have connection. And those are like, if those needs aren't met, we're not going to feel good. And what's incredibly interesting back to this, like our original relationship, like the reason that we have those needs is because of our interaction with space. And I talked about the people on the savannah before, but let me like think about a kid playing on the beach, right? So like building a sandcastle on the beach. So agency is like, hey, I can decide where to build this sandcastle. I can decide how tall to make it. I can decide, you know, the design that I want. That's agency. I have a say in this thing. And then growth is like, okay, every time you put sand on there, you learn something about like, okay, if it's too wet, it splatters. If it's too dry, it might flake off. If I drip it, it makes a different design than if I just smash it on there. So you're learning as you're engaging with the environment, which, you know, it feels good to learn. It feels good to grow. It feels good to kind of go one step further than we were before. And then the connection is like, okay, how do we interact with other people and with the larger environment? And, for the sandcastle, at least when my kids are doing it, it turns into like, okay, how do we recruit more people to help us build? And this is actually the original reason that civilization came together, right? It's like moving away from hunter-gatherer bands to larger groups so that they could build and maintain bigger structures. So it's like there's this connection that comes from building. So those are the three core needs, agency, competence, and connection. And they came from our relationship with our environment. But now it seems to me that oftentimes, like if you look at the Zillow page for a new house, they don't talk about how this is going to give you agency, competence, and connection, right? It's like, we kind of know, but it's like, okay, how many square feet? Like, what does it look like? And so we end up prioritizing these things about our space that when we should first be asking about agency, competence, and connection, and then going to those other things.
Okay. So if I'm looking at a Zillow, we live in San Diego and we do not have air conditioning. So come summer, grilling outside isn't just preferred, it is absolutely required. I will not add one more degree of heat to this house if I can help it. And grilling nights work best when quality protein is already in the freezer, ready to go. The nights it's not, well, that's when dinner becomes a chaotic scramble. So I just ordered from Omaha Steaks and I went straight for the Burger Perfection flight because my husband and daughter, well, they have declared themselves official beef burger connoisseurs and we're doing a family taste test. 20 pure ground beef burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak, filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Each burger is ground from a single cut, not blended. It's steakhouse quality without the steakhouse price. Omaha Steaks has spent over 100 years perfecting this. Every cut of meat arrives vacuum sealed, flash frozen, and ready to go the moment you need it. No scrambling, no guessing. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Oh, listing, and it's giving me all the things, and I'm trying to figure out, is this going to be a good place for my family in terms of agency, growth, and connection? What do I need to look for?
Well, I don't know. We should brainstorm that together.
Sounds fun.
Some of the stuff is on there, and I was just talking to my editor about this earlier today, that it would be fun to create a Zillow listing that prioritized those things. But the walkability score, right? And there's like a social connectivity score, right? That kind of gives you some indication of how many people you're going to see. I also think that you know, we've got to be honest about the kind of connection that we want, right? It's not necessary. You might just want to have a closer connection with your family, which means being isolated from all that other stuff so that it's just, you know, the
or maybe a smaller house,
family members.
And
then, of course, you know, you can think about the setup of different designs that are going to create connection. Definitely having like common areas, but also having places that people can retreat to recharge so that when they are connecting, they're fully able to engage in that environment. I think the decluttering is a good one for connection, actually. So much of what all this extra stuff does is just create mental distractions, right? And, you know, not only is that stressing you out because you have to deal with it all the time, but if you're focused on that, you're not focused on the other person, right? It's super hard to, you know, it's hard enough to just kind of understand where another person is coming from if you're not also distracted by the shin guards or whatever that's on the floor, right?
Yeah. Or it just like, cleared off and someone just put something on that table. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think the agency, I mean, the buying of the home is kind of very agentic, right? I mean, you can think about how much more it feels, more control you feel like you have if you can actually like paint and do the renovations and do the things that you want. It's not so much that the actual paint color, just the ability to make those changes to suit you. And then the growth, I think, is so much of like, how does the space stretch you, right? Like, and I think it's really easy to just get in the habit and routine of using things in the exact same way. I mean, I'm like in my office now and I'm like just sitting facing this corner because that's the way that I set up the office the first time. And, you know, so periodically I have to say, okay, like, would it be fun to like just shake things up? And that's not a huge area of growth, but it is going to like give me a new experience in the office and new ways of kind of moving through my day. And that's just an office. And then if you think about it with a house, right, it's like, can we use these places in different ways? Is that an opportunity to grow and to, you know, expand what we're comfortable with? So those are some examples, but there's certainly not an exhaustive list.
I like it. Okay. Well, in my house, I'll give you an example because we have had to, we rent our house, so I don't have a ton of agency over what I can do, but we just paint walls anyway. Yeah. Hopefully my landlord's not watching the show. but we just do it anyway. And I figure I'm going to have to repaint the whole house anyway. What's the difference? I'll just paint it back white. No big deal. But we have that growth thing, I think, is very interesting because we have rearranged our house multiple times. We've tried to rearrange and sometimes have been total success. Like we've moved my office into this room, which is right off the kitchen, which was right here. And then our outside's right here. And so it's an open area, but this was our dining room for a while. And then I didn't like looking at a wall and I wanted windows. And so I was like, I'm taking over this space. So I rearranged our whole house and we got it working for us. We unsuccessfully did that in our living room a couple times when we wanted to have access to a window. It just didn't work. We had to put it back to where it was. Whatever, it's fine. But I find that very interesting. And it makes sense now why that felt so good for me was one, I did take over agency over saying like, no, I want to claim a better space for my desk. And then two, trying new things and figuring out what worked and what didn't work did give me a little bit of that growth. I'm going to come back to this question of growth and nostalgia later in the episode. So I'm going to table that. I put a little note for it. We're going to come back to that.
And can I comment on the renting versus buying thing? I think the key thing is not like rent versus buy, right? The key thing is what is going to give me the most agency in my living situation, right? And if renting is going to allow you to be like, okay, now I'm flexible and I can, you know, if we needed to move or whatever, like renting is the right thing, or it's going to give me more agency in the rest of my life because I'm not going to have this whole like sunk financial cost in the house. The key thing is like, okay, I'm thinking about my relationship with my surroundings. What's how is it going to make me feel agency or not? And the other point about agency is, like, there are always going to be things that we can't control, right? And if you're renting, you're not going to like knock down a wall, but it's like you find the things, when you find things that you can't control, you'd be like, oh, that feels kind of frustrating because it's stifling my agency. And that's a time to be like, okay, well, what can I control? What can I control? And what's going to make me feel agency?
I appreciate you saying that because, yeah, I mean, sometimes we do feel like things are out of our control. But if we can just be creative and look at the different perspectives and the different opportunities and just a different angle, it might give us that kind of just push that we need to say, like, okay, stop throwing that little pity party for myself and look at what I can do. So I appreciate that. Let's get back to this idea of clutter and the visual clutter, because that is one thing that I have found in my life. If there is stuff all over my house, it is so hard for me to focus. And we were kind of talking about that in the connecting with people in our homes. And so if we have piles of mail or, you know, those scattered shin guards or, you know, anything like that, and my listeners are not able to focus on the people around us. And so that's when we are like, okay, that's when we want to subtract those spatial distractions. Then we make room for that connection. Can you unpack that a little bit more for us? So how does the stuff in our homes literally get between us and the people we love?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just, we have, we're wired to pay attention to our surroundings, right? Mm-hmm. So like the same, you know, that's a smart thing to do as we're moving through the world, is to like pay attention to what's around us. And, you know, one of the things is that if you're the one who's in the home, you might've gotten used to all of these things around you and you're not really seeing them anymore.
Yes.
Or maybe you are, but you're probably seeing them less than somebody who comes into your home, right? Because like you're coming in, you're in this new space and you're looking, okay, where are the threats? Where are the opportunities? What can I learn about this person from the space? What's just catching my eye? And all of those things create like cognitive load. I mean, just like a mental load that's like, this is something that you're thinking about, and we have finite amount of, you know, ability to think about things at yeah. the same time, right? So if you're thinking about those things, then you're not thinking about like, oh, what, like, connect with Diana, or what did she just say? You know, all of these things that help you connect with the other people, right? Because, you know, a conversation, and that's actually like our ability to take information in is about the amount of like one conversation, right? It's really hard to listen to two people at the same time, and like listening to one person while having all these spatial distractions is also almost impossible. So that's kind of why it matters to connection, because you're
okay.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. So I think, you know, as you're trying to set up your spaces for that, it's like, how do you, obviously we want to like be welcoming to our visitors, but we also don't want it to be so like, well, not cluttered, but you also probably don't want to make them feel like, oh, this is such a cool centerpiece that all they're doing is like paying attention to the centerpiece, if you know what I mean. Or, you know,
sense.
If the centerpiece is yeah. so cool that you want them to pay attention to it, then like devote some time to that before you start trying to connect, right? Because it's, there's a lot to take in when you come to a new place.
Makes sense. Right. And also just, yeah, not that it's all about, you know, how you want to present your house for other people. But thinking about that, like, we get blind to it, right? We're home and it becomes our home. And I'm probably one of the worst defenders of it in my family, right? Like, I'll come home and I'll just put stuff down and I'll be like, because I'm the one that's going to clean it up, right? Or these are the excuses that live in my head. I'll just put the dishes on the counter because I'm the one that's going to clean them up after, you know, I drop our daughter off at school or whatever, right? But when you get into those bad habits and you don't have that conversation, because I know that kind of bothers me when other people do that in my home. And so I just having those conversations about like, okay, hey, I'm just going to, or if I'm doing it and I'm in a rush, like, hey, I'm just going to leave this here. I'm going to deal with that later. Don't feel like I'm pushing off responsibility onto you. I can see that kind of helping with connection too, because it's not necessarily about having my house clean for the sake of it being clean and someone coming over. Although I will admit that as a woman, a lot of our self-worth and all of that is societally put on us, that I have to have a good home and maintain it and everything to whatever. So we'll get in. That's a whole nother topic. So I do feel better when my house is clean and someone stops by and I'm like, come on in. You know, of course I'm going to feel better about that. And we can talk about why that happens. But it also is a nice way for me to do something good for myself and for my family and, you know, for my partner, because we work, both of us work out of the home. And so if our house is a disaster, it just takes me away from all of the work I want to do too, because I'm now totally distracted trying to have this conversation with you, thinking about the pile of laundry that's in the living room, maybe if it were, right? Because then I'm like,
Sorry for bringing it up. Yeah.
Do I sound passionate?
No, and I think that the also one thing that you touched on in the example was just like how the space makes things visible, makes behaviors visible, right? So it's, you know, when you leave the dish out, that kind of sends a signal that, okay, this is a place where it's okay to leave the dish out, or as a kid, I can do it, or as the husband, I can do it. Whereas when you put it away, it kind of sends the opposite signal. Maybe it's like, okay, I want to be careful there, because the signal should not be that like, oh, I'm the only person who puts dishes away. But it could, maybe a different example is like, if you rearrange the space to make it more welcoming to your kid, then the kid's like, oh, like mom did that for me. And that's something that then I can do in the space. And that's it's a much more visible reminder than if you just say, good job. There's no physical reminder of that.
Absolutely. No, that makes sense. And I'm not trying to get on a high horse or make any political statements or, you know, societal statements, whatever. My husband's fantastic.
They're true. Yeah.
I'm not dogging on anyone. I'm saying I'm one of the first offenders. But I love that idea. That's why behaviorally it makes sense. And we need to set the example. That's why it's so important, because clutter does attract clutter. What you do once, someone's going to do again, and you're going to be more likely to do it again. So if we can just make a little switch, so how can we start to make some of those switches behaviorally that can help us craft our environment to set it up in the way that we want it to be?
Yeah. I mean, so the principle there is that like one of the most powerful ways to change behavior is through social norms, right? And the social norms work because like there's a behavior, but then the behavior is rendered visible. And, you know, so people like will do all kinds of tricks to try to make certain behaviors visible, like, oh, here's a sticker for voting, right? And now everybody knows you voted. But with space, you don't have to do the tricks because the behavior is already visible in the space. The physical decluttering kind of leads to mental decluttering, because now this is like, just here's a behavior that you've rendered visible that people realize they can use in other places. So that would be my first one, is like get started, you know, just practice with it. I mean, you mentioned before some of these failed experiments that you have with but that's not a failed experiment, right? It's like you grew, you realized that this thing didn't work, and you realized, so that's like a huge learning opportunity by engaging with the world around you. The other thing is like thinking of new uses for the same spaces. So one thing with growth, right, is like, it's like running. You want to be like just outside your comfort zone, but not so far outside that you just can't do it, right? And it's like, you don't say, okay, I'm going to run a marathon and then just run 26 miles. You train and then you get a little more fit and then you train some more and get a little, I mean, you like do what's the next logical thing. And so like using the spaces that you have in different ways really sets up well for that, right? Where if you say, okay, well, here's a place that we haven't been using in our house, what could we use it for? And that, that should be kind of within your comfort zone but also kind of expanding your ability to grow, or like showing that you can grow. I also think about that in terms of kind of exploring a neighborhood or exploring your office building, right? Like we just have these routines and we're on the same beaten path. It's like, well, what if you just like walk the next block over on your way to work the next day, or on your way home? Maybe you will find something new there, and you might like it, right? So you've got this added benefit of growing and like you're expanding your territory. I mean, boop, boop, boop. This is the way that I've done it. These are the places that I'm going to go. This is where it feels comfortable and familiar. And maybe that's okay. But if you think about like, okay, how can I force some growth opportunities, then that might be better.
Huh, for sure. I mean, how many times have you driven home and been like, huh, how did I get here? I don't even remember the full, right. Like, I can't recall the entire path because we've done this over and over and over again, and you can kind of just zone out. So, yeah, I love that. So for people that are like, okay, great, I can't really totally change everything up. There was an example in your book about the family that started eating dinner outside.
Okay. Yeah,
tell us about them.
I'm glad I get to talk about them. They're such a hilarious family because they have two twin boys that are my son's age. So I've known them since they were like four, and they're hilarious little boys. I mean, just such great kids. And then they ended up having two more girls after them. So, I mean, there was like a time in their life where they had like 2 5-year-olds, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And then like both working parents. And I was talking to the dad and he's like, yeah, I was like, how's your life going? And he's like, well, we had this huge revelation this summer. It's like, oh, what was it? He's like, oh, we're eating outside now. I was like, what do you mean? Like you have like picnics and stuff? He's like, no, free meal outside. And they had just taken to like, just like they had a patio. It's not even anything huge off the back of their kitchen. And they were just eating outside. And he was like, it's amazing. Like we never have to clean up, right? Because the kids, like everything that they spilled would just like cycle into the ecosystem. And then, you know, kids that age too, it's like the whole, you set up this whole dinner to eat and then they just like eat in 2 minutes and then they're asking to do other things or they're just doing other things. And so he's like, yeah. And then like my wife and I could eat while they were running around the backyard and getting some of their energy out. And so, you know, it's not, the point isn't that this is like the right renovation for everybody, but like that space was always there. And, you know, it wasn't defined as an eating space, but it was something that they had access to. And then when they tried it, which provided some growth that also provided like, you know, a whole new opportunity in the way they were living their lives.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant because, again, we get so accustomed to this is our dining table. This is where we eat. This is how we do it. Every day is the same. And maybe we just need to step back and say, okay, what's one thing in my life that's driving me absolutely bonkers on a regular basis? And what can I do to just flip it on its head? So I thought that was such a great concrete example that we all could just be like, that was so maybe easy in the end, right? It wasn't, you didn't have to completely change everything. You're still eating dinner. You're still at your house. You just moved it outside to make it a little bit easier for everyone.
Yeah, it's like thinking, like, I don't think we do a great job of like moving among the spaces to which we have access, right? You know, and we
totally
just get confined.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% on board with that because, yeah, you just get used to whatever you're doing. Why are we such creatures of habit?
Well, that's, I mean, there's this thing called functional fixedness, which is like the more you use something in a certain way, the more you see it as only being used for that function. And it's like one of these fun areas of research because adults are worse at it than kids because kids don't have like these predetermined ideas about what things are. So like the famous experiment for demonstrating functional fixedness is, I'll see if I can get this right. They gave the people in the experiment like a tack box, a candle, and tacks. And they're like, how would you attach the candle to the wall? And all the grownups were like trying to like stick the tack through the wax or like melt the wax and like stick it on there. And then the little kids were just like tacked the box to the wall and put the candle in the box. And the reason is like, all the grownups could see was like, that's a candle, it makes wax, and those are tacks, and the box was just a container for tacks, and it couldn't be anything else. And so the kids are more likely to get that right. And so I think, obviously, you know, one example, one thing you can do is just like watch what kids do, but also just reminding yourself that, hey, I might have these fixed ideas about what the spaces can be and which ones are, what are the real limits and what are just like limits that I've imposed because I've used them in this way so many times. And that's how you can kind of break from the functional fixedness is like you take the thing, like, so for the tech box example, it's like, okay, this is a tech box, but what else could it be? I mean, and then all of a sudden you're open to more opportunities. So it's like, this is a patio, yes, but like, what else could it be? Oh, we could eat dinner out here.
Yeah, could be our dining room. I love that. And the people that are listening to this, most of my audience is moms. So, I mean, this is great. Let's do this as a use case. Let's get our families together and say, hey, kids, what would you like the house to be used as, right? What are some different ideas you would have? And first off, they're going to love having the input because, again, agency, right?
Agency,
they're going to love it.
And they're bought in.
Totally.
Like, I was thinking about this. I was doing this with my son recently. And I was like, we're just putting down some carpet padding on the stairs so they weren't as, the hardwood stairs, so they weren't as slippery. We knew exactly what was going there, but I'm like, hey, bud, what color would you want these to be? And he picked a color that was fine. So it's like, all right, let's do it. And then when they came, it's just like super simple, just kind of stick them on there. And I did some and he did some. And now he's like totally bought in, right? And that, so it gives him agency. And that one wasn't as much his ideas, but I think, you know, asking them for ideas would have the same thing. Yeah.
For sure.
I get asked, one of my friends is always like, well, okay, so when you're writing this book, where should my kids do their homework? And I'm like, well, where they want to do their homework, right? And it's like, they mm-hmm. should have some like control over where it's going to be. And that's probably the first factor. And then get into the factors like, okay, are they going to be good with distractions or do they need a quiet spot and things like that? So yeah, I love that of, you know, kind of involving the kids in that whole activity. And I think the other reason I love it is because, you know, I think a big message of this book, which, you know, I don't think it's lost. I think the people who are listening to you are already pretty in tune with their physical surroundings, right? And they're conscious of like just not getting stuck on our screens all the time. But when you're asking kids to engage in this physical world, you're like asking them to do something that's incredibly healthy for them and is natural as humans for us to be able to do. And you're taking them away from this screen world, which is only two-dimensional and, you know, can't do the things for us. It can't provide agency, competence, and connection the way interacting with our physical world is. So, you know, getting the kids involved is great on many levels, I think.
Yeah. And plus, so many people say, my kids don't want to declutter. I can't get them to go through their stuff. Well, maybe this could be a way that we totally flip it on its head, right? You're not asking them to declutter. You're asking them to think of a creative way to use the house, which then will get them to want to set up that space. And you're going to have to make some tough decisions, right? We don't have room for all the stuff. So what are you choosing? So, yeah.
Yeah. And then they're more bought into it, right? It's like, hey, I bet, you know, in that space, they're going to be more likely to be like, mom, stop putting your dirty dishes in here. We had to declutter. This is my space.
My space now.
Yeah.
Get your stuff out of here. Oh, hey, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
Get them to do it instead. I love it. Yeah, so good. So good. Okay, I want to come back to that question of growth versus nostalgia, because I think we can get really into this idea of new, I want to redo my space, I'm so tired of my space. You know, we get inundated with Instagram and Pinterest and all these things. And there was a quote in your book. I want to read this part real quick because I thought it was so interesting. You said, we can remodel the kitchen until we're blue in the face without getting any closer to happiness, sacrificing nostalgia in the process. So can you talk to us about the difference between like nostalgia or how we build nostalgia? And you were talking about your the cottage that you go to in the summer and things like that. And that's kind of where this all came from. I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Because I know I can get so caught up in that idea of, but I just want to redo my space. Or if I just redo my space, it'll feel great. That's what I need. I just need a refresh. But you're coming at it from a slightly different angle. So talk to us about that.
And nostalgia is another one of those words that, like, the root is very space oriented, right? So obviously nostalgia is like, kind of a longing for the past, which can be bad in some cases, right? Where if you're like kind of stuck in the past. But I think the positive side of nostalgia is obviously like, oh, we're remembering things that are worth remembering, and we're kind of carrying them forward with us. And spaces are like a great vehicle for nostalgia. And that's what I mean by, like, if you're not careful with the renovations, then you can take away the thing that made the space meaningful and then never get it back. And then that's not to say that we should just like leave everything as it was in the, whenever it was initially built. But I think there is this pull to renovate that's driven by the same thing that like has us click on our screens, which is just dopamine, right? It's like, hey, this is going to be something that I can do and buy, and it's going to feel good for a second, but then that's going to decline, and I'm gonna need to do it again if I want to get that same feeling. Whereas nostalgia, it's like that keeps growing, right? If you have a meaningful spot in the world, that the more times you visit it, the more meaningful it gets, the more like it used to be, the more meaningful it gets. So like, we're fortunate to have in my dad's side of the family, his great grandmother's bought a cottage on the beach in New Jersey, and it's like in the family so long that it's now split between seven different families, and the next generation it'll be like 49 or something. Not 49,
You
but
each get a
some
week.
ridiculous number. Yeah, that's exactly how it works, actually. I mean, we each get a week, but it's like it keeps the people together, but it also creates this situation where I go there and it's like I'm with my dad, and he's with his extended family. And so like it's just this irreplaceable kind of memories that come back because of visiting the space. And I think I write about in the book the outdoor shower. So like one of the best things about that spot is the outdoor shower. And it's not like we've never updated the outdoor shower, but there's always been an outdoor shower. And like that's the part that is nostalgic for me. So I think the thing to do here, like the tip is, okay, like just be conscious of that, right? Like don't, before you, redo something, or when you redo something, think about like, am I doing this for the dopamine hit, or is it actually going to make the space better? But also thinking about like, okay, is there something about this space that's nostalgic, that is meaningful, and how do I make sure I don't lose that? And again, you can renovate and not lose the nostalgia, but you need to kind of think about like, how are you keeping the meaning of the space? I will say I teach a class to a whole bunch of college students, and they're like, this semester there are 120. And one of the things I do for like the icebreaker in the first day, because it's a class about our surroundings and the built environment, is say like, what's your favorite place in the whole world, right? And these are students, like collectively they've literally been everywhere, right? I mean, they've been to all these super cool places in the world. They've, had amazing experiences. And like the dominant answer for your favorite place in the whole world is like my grandma's porch, right? That's the or or it's like a dock on the lake, or it's like the corner booth at my hometown diner. Is they're all very regular places that the reason they're their favorite place is because of like the memory and the meaning, and who is there with them. And I think that's something priceless that the spaces can provide. And it's not something that like you can pull in an outside designer to do for you, that you've got to be the one that's conscious about it and put yourself in those spaces and make those spaces, right? When you know that all these kids are saying grandma's porch is the most important place. Well, when you're a grandma, think about like, okay, how am I making my porch fun? And a lot of it is just grandma was there telling her stories, so.
For sure. Well, yeah, grandmas get to be fun, right?
Yeah.
Grandmas get to be fun. They don't have to enforce the rules. But yes, how can we do that at our home, right? What are the routines and the moments and kind of those things that we do on a regular basis that start to weave or create that worn path that we come back to when we need comfort and when we want to feel supported? And our homes are, like you said, one of the those are the place. That's the place. That's the place where we get to be, where we get to, you know, fully express who we are, where we can have the agency, the growth and connection that we need in order to thrive in our environments. And so, yeah, looking at our spaces from that lens versus just declutter everything because the stuff's driving me crazy. Well, why is it driving you crazy? How can you dive into that a little bit more and create those environments that will support you and your family? Speaking of family, before we go, I want to have the opportunity to talk about Josie and her Josie's way, you know, and all these trails and paths that you have, you and others have continued to develop. Can you tell us about Josie and her story? And
So my daughter Josie, she died on Christmas in 2023, suddenly, just like a freak illness. And that's as hard as you can imagine. And I was kind of halfway through writing the book at that point and had all these stories in there of Josie, like the space story, right? And there's another one with functional fixedness where when she was like a little kid, oh God, she was so freaking like, she just like did what she wanted. So like one day I came into the kitchen and she had to be like two at the time. And she was just like, she had pushed her high chair over in front of the pantry and opened up the doors of the pantry and was just sitting on her high chair, like eating off of the shelf of the pantry. So it's like, here's the crackers, here's the freeze-dried strawberries, here's all the stuff I want. I don't understand why my parents keep bringing this to the table when I could just bring my chair over here and have everything. And so anyway, that was an example of functional fixedness. I had all these like fun Josie examples in there, and then I'm like, all right, well, like when she died, I was obviously thinking about spaces and, you know, and stories, right? I think one of the things that I've kind of knew but realized even more is like the things that live on are, you know, the stories and the memories. And so like the book's an opportunity to share stories of her life and how she lived, but also the way that spaces are so intertwined with our memories. And it's like, okay, how can I use that to kind of spread more of Josie's spirit in the world in a way that she would want. We're building these, people are building these Josie's ways all over. And it's just, you know, it came from this time I was walking between, we'd always walk between our house and there's like a pond on the University of Virginia campus that we'd go fishing at. And Josie would always want to just like take some random way to get there and use it as a way to explore. And one day we're exploring and we're going through it's an old house, but the university now owns it. And so we're walking through the yard and then through some English ivy and then walking up a path from the house to the street and then going back to our house. And on the path from the house to the street, the owner of whoever had owned the house before had like etched their name in marble. So it said something like Villino Lambeth or something fancy. And so Josie looks at it, and like one of the benefits, right, of being four is that letters can say whatever you want because she doesn't know how to read. And she looks at it and she's like, oh, that says Josie's way. This is Josie's way.
Yeah. I mean, she sounds like an amazing, amazing person and just full of energy and spitfire and just, yeah, life. I mean, right? Like just all the things that you just cherish, just that spirit. And so, yeah, I'm so sorry for your loss. I cannot imagine, just so devastating, but I appreciate that you are able to share about her and share her with the world and that people are able to make these Josie's ways and make little paths in their life that can be a little outside the norm and maybe making their lives better because they have the permission. She gave people permission to do things their way. You know, that we get so stuck in our traditional ways to do things and we don't think about it, even though, you know, Josie's way is probably better. Let's just do it Josie's way. Yeah, I love that. Well,
You're right. That's such a good articulation of it. I mean, it's like nothing if not agency there, right? It's like, this is, we can do it. We can do it this way. Yeah. So
do it her way. It's probably better. Well, lady, as we end on that note, can you tell people where they can find you and where they can find your book?
Yeah. So, I mean, the book's in a good place. It's available on Amazon or independent booksellers or, you know, wherever you get your books, you can get it. Same with the book Subtract. And my parents gave me a good Google name, so you can just Google Lydie Klotz. And my website is lydieklotz.com. I have, some more resources there, but those are the best ways to find me.
I will say I've never run across another person named Lydie. So yeah, they did a good job. They were planning ahead. Little did they know.
They were.
But my favorite way to end every episode, we're going to come back around, is with three rapid fire questions. And so the first one is, what does clutter free mean to you?
I think a lot about it in terms of information. I mean, my job is to kind of create and share knowledge. And so that means I need to take in a lot of information, which is not a lot, but I need to, it's important what information I take in. And that's, it's just really becoming more and more important to like filter out the content that's not authentic, right? I mean, there's so much that's, I mean, obviously AI generated, but other stuff that's just so formulaic. And I think stuff that has a soul and that has a person behind it is clutter free and like not getting caught up in other types of content that doesn't have that. So I think that's where I'm focused most right now with the clutter free.
That's interesting. I've never had that answer before. More about authenticity. I love it. Number two, what is making you happy right now or in this season of life?
I think that the authenticity is just going to be so much more and more important going forward. It's just so easy to produce content now that like having, it's got to be authentic.
Very true.
Which you are, obviously. But I mean, I think it's like, that's why these conversations resonate, because it's two people actually talking. What's making me happy? I mean, it is obviously bittersweet, but to be able to spread Josie's story and to be able to share the ideas in the book that, you know, so Josie's stories in ways that can help people, in ways that can make people smile and, you know, love their kids even more. And the being able to share the ideas in the book in ways that can hopefully help people, that's great. And I get a lot of joy out of my son, and just seeing him grow and, you know, exceed me already in so many ways, and just try to like be along for the ride and be a supportive parent. That's just an amazing way to be able to spend my time. And I feel very lucky to be able to do that.
Oh, that's really nice. And number three, what is one small step you recommend listeners take today?
I would maybe try space before screen. So I think one way to, you know, one of the great things about our surroundings is that just like noticing them, we can see things. And I think next time you find yourself looking at your screen, maybe just be like, I'm going to pay attention to this space and find three new things that I didn't notice about it. And I guarantee you, even if it's a space you've spent a ton of time in, you will find some new things about it. And I think what that shows you is just not necessarily that those are earth-shattering things in your space, but just that like we're missing a lot of the physical world by not paying attention to it. And if we can just be more present in the physical world, it can do things for us. And it hits all of our senses. It's three-dimensional. It's always changing. It's just so much more interesting than anything our screens can do. So space before screen is the one thing.
Yeah, that is so true. Yeah, we're so busy. We just get so caught up in what's happening that we don't take a moment and just look around. So that is a fantastic tip. I love that. Lydie, I really appreciate this conversation. I appreciate your authenticity, your honesty, your vulnerability. I appreciate what you're doing in the world, your research and what you're putting out there. I think it's really necessary and needed. And like you say in the book, good luck to whoever has to shelve this book. That's their problem, not yours. So yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for sharing your audience with me. And yeah, thanks for everything you've talked about. And every time I have a conversation like this, is a, you know, it refines my own thinking, and it's a useful feedback loop into the, you know, kind of research and writing process. So I really appreciate your contributions to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Me too. And these conversations into my podcast. So I appreciate it. All right. Well, you have a lovely rest of your day.
You too.
All right. Cheers. Well, where do I start with that conversation? There was so much, and it just hit differently. It was very interesting talking to somebody from more of a research perspective, where the ideas, there's lots of tips and things, and we could get into the nitty gritty, but a lot of it really is more of just this idea of pulling back, having perspective and permission to look at your home in a completely different light, look at your environment in a completely different light, set things up in a way that maybe you haven't thought of. It doesn't have to be hard or difficult. It just is that way because we get so used to the way we've been doing things for so long. And so if we can take a step back and look at things a little bit more like a child, maybe we would have a little more freedom in our homes to do the things we want to do. So I'd highly encourage you, get your family involved, get other people involved, and ask for their help and give them some agency over their over your home as well, so that everybody feels like a contributing factor and you don't have to have the pressure of being the one that does it all. And so I think the one thing that's going to stay with me the longest, though, is this idea that clutter isn't just messy, right? It's actually the barrier to connection. So when Lighty said that our brains can really only handle about one conversation's worth of information at a time, and we are processing piles of mail, the, you know, sports gear that's just thrown over there, dishes from breakfast, lunch, or dinner, you know, whatever's going on, we've got all this stuff going on, all this noise. We don't have the mental bandwidth left to connect with the person that's sitting right in front of us. I've felt that. I have felt myself, you know, in life just kind of feeling like I'm trying three steps ahead. I'm trying to like put everything together, and then I don't realize what my daughter's been saying to me or the help she needs or whatever. So decluttering has really helped me be more present in my home, and that's why I do what I do. That's why I'm here. It's why I have this show, is because I want to help you do the same. And so the science behind why so many of us have been feeling stuck or frustrated or just mentally bombarded, this is why. And this is why it's so important to look at the stuff in our homes and let go of those things that aren't helping us be the person we want to be the partner we want to be, or be the parent we want to be. So I think it's really important and powerful for us to look at these reasons and to declutter based on that science. All right. I loved the family that moved dinner outside and how the tantrums and the messes just didn't matter anymore, and that they've continued doing that. No matter what the weather was like, they fixed their problem and, you know, came up with other ways to solve it, which was creative and innovative and fun. And so that concept of functional fixedness, where adults get so locked into this is the dining room, so this is where we eat, you know, we don't have to do that. We get to say in our house, like, don't let everyone else tell you what to do. You get to have the final say. So let's think about it that way. And how can we be a little more creative? And then Josie's way. I mean, if that doesn't make you want to hug your kids and go make some memories in your space, I mean, that's what it's all about, right? So felt deeply for his story. You could see us both get emotional if you're watching this over on YouTube. You could probably hear it in our voices. Yeah. And it's so special that he's continuing her spirit and memory and legacy and continuing to tell her story, you know, through this book and through his work and now through my show and through, you know, all the people that are making little Josie's ways around the world. So let's do things Josie's way. We don't have to do things just because other people have told us to do them or the barriers are set up in front of us. Let's just find our own path and think about Josie when we do it. All right. But I would love to know what landed for you. So come tell me on Instagram. I am @wannabeclutterfree over there. And if this episode meant something to you, would you take 30 seconds, please, and leave a review? It really does help other families find the show. So thank you so much again to Lighty for being here and for sharing his research, his stories, and his heart with us. His book, In a Good Place, comes out April 28th. That was yesterday. And I cannot recommend it enough. It's very good, easy to read. Like if you think like a researcher is going to have all these like really hard concepts, he breaks it down, very memorable, lots of examples. So I think you're going to love it. So definitely check it out. All right. You can find links to his books and his website in the show notes at wannabeclutterfree.com/307. Again, wannabeclutterfree.com/307. And remember, here's your quick win from Lighty himself. Try space before screen. So next time you reach for your phone, pause and look up and find at least one new thing about the space that you are in that you've passed over, that you haven't thought about, that you haven't noticed, or maybe you've just forgotten. Maybe it's something you remembered before, but you've forgotten about it. And so just take a minute to appreciate or notice the things around you. It's going to make a big difference. And I don't know about you, but I reach for my phone lots and lots and lots throughout the day. So it's lots of moments that I could connect with my space. All right, I'll see you next week. Until then, take care. Keep things simple. Take a minute to look at your surroundings and notice your environment around you, and know that I believe in you. I know you can do anything you set your mind to. I'm Deanna Yates, and you've been listening to Wanna Be Clutter Free. I'll see you next week. Cheers.